Hare Krishna to all the devotees of Richmond and all the devotees from wherever you have joined. Happy to be back again with all of you for our second part of the seminar, Ideal Grihastha Life, or rather practical tips to a hassle-free journey in Grihastha Life. So for all those who have joined only this session and were not present for our previous session, we just give a little recap and we start. Before that, I would like to offer a small prayer to Srila Prabhupada and we'll just begin. Thank you very much. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Desha Tharine Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshulan Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Shri Radha Damodar Bhagwan Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Gauri Tai Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Vartaman Iskon Guru Bind Ki Jai, His Holiness Jai Prataka Swami Guru Maharaj Ki Jai, and my humble obeisances to all the devotees out there, Vancha Kalpataru Bhayascha, Kripa Sindhu Bevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Thank you very much to giving me an opportunity to have this association, esteem association of all of you devotees out there. So, last session, we were discussing about this acronym we got at Grihastha, and as Divinam Prabhu rightly summarized, we spoke on GRI. So we spoke on how Grihastha life can be beautiful if we have a proper goal design. And last Saturday we were discussing how every Grihastha should have a proper goal and should have a proper decision where he wants to go to, because if the goal is not decided, then sometimes you go on this path and then you come back and then you go on the other path and you end up wasting so much time. We also spoke about G for being grateful. So we were discussing how it's such a privilege to have a partner in our Grihastha life, and you should be very grateful to each other. And we should realize it a little early before we end up losing each other, because nobody is permanent in this world. So we spoke about having goal, we spoke about being grateful, and then we also spoke about R for being respectful. So we were discussing how we should give space to each other. We also spoke about how to be reasonable expectations. And then we went on speaking about I for integrity. And we also spoke about I for importance, how much importance to be given to what. So that is where we stopped last Saturday. And I stopped at a place where I was telling you that how much importance to be given to what. And specifically I was talking about how sometimes, whether pleasant events or unpleasant events, how much space do you give to those events in your mind is very important. So I was telling you that, kindly remind me, because we'll go a little deeper into that subject today. So according to our Upanishads, there are seven layers of our mind, which in the Upanishads are also called like seven horses of the sun. Now these seven layers of our mind are the conscious mind, with which we interact with the people in general. Then there is a subconscious mind, then there is an unconscious mind, and then there is a collective conscious mind, and there is something called superconscious mind, and then there is a spontaneous mind, and then there is an ultimate mind. And now whatever happens in our life is passed through these layers of mind. So now, let's say for an example, there is an unpleasant event happened between a husband and wife. Now when the unpleasant event takes place, it may take place just for 5 minutes, let's say. But what happens in that 5 minutes, when you don't end up that issue, when you don't close it there, then after some time, the event or the unpleasant issue that has just happened goes from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. Because your conscious mind is so full of activities that it will simply transfer the data from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. So it just goes somewhere back. But then what happens after some time, the hard disk of subconscious mind also becomes full. So it transfers that data from subconscious mind to your unconscious mind. Now the problem is, when this data is transferred from your subconscious mind to the unconscious mind, it changes its form and qualities and just about everything, and it becomes more dangerous. This is something like water. You know, when we put the water in the refrigerator, or let's say in the fridger, after some time it just changes its form. From liquid it becomes solid. So now if you throw water on somebody, you can't kill the person, you can't hurt the person. But when that water becomes ice cubes or becomes hard, when you throw it on somebody, they may get hurt. So there is a change of form and quality. Now same thing happens when a particular event is in our mind. After some time, when it goes to the unconscious mind, from the subconscious mind, it changes its form. So there what it happens, if it's a pleasant event, let's say you have attachment for somebody, you know, it becomes a raga, which is prohibited. Or if, let's say, you have a anger on somebody, or then it becomes dvesha. It just changes its form and it becomes so hard, that which is not good for our spiritual life. So for example, sometimes you will see there are certain people in your life whom you're not comfortable with, and then you don't even know the reason why you're not comfortable. Have any of you come across sometime such kind of people? You just don't feel good about it. You don't feel good about them. And you are wondering, this person has done nothing wrong to me, but somehow I'm not comfortable with the person. Now what has actually happened is, because you see, when you change bodies, you don't change your subtle body, right? The subtle body comes with you. Mind, ego, intelligence, it goes with you. So when you carry certain impressions, they're carried in your next life too. That is why the scripture says, close your account in this lifetime with anybody, whatever you have to. Because if you don't close it, it goes to the next life with interest. So now what happens, if you have a bad feeling for somebody and you haven't closed the account this lifetime, you will carry it in your next lifetime. And mind you, the people around us, whether it's our family, relative, friends and all, it's not that we just have one time relation with them this lifetime, because you have so much karmic bonds with them, drunanu bandhan, that they're going to be around for some time. So a couple of lifetimes they will be around you. In fact, our life actually rotates among all those close people only again and again in different forms. Sometimes they come as a son, daughter, wife, children, mother-in-law, different kind of relationships, unless you finish your karmic bandhan with them. So now imagine the people whom we are dealing with, if we don't close our account with them this lifetime, they're going to continue with us for a couple of few more lifetimes, and every time it's going to come back with interest. So that is why when you don't close account with somebody this lifetime, then the carry forward is bad. This is something like, you know, you have a meeting in your office and you had a fight with your colleague, and if you don't finish up the fight, or you know, don't give each other a hug and finish up your fighting in this meeting, when you start the second meeting, it's going to start bitter because you didn't end it well. But in the same meeting, if you would have finished whatever tussle you had or whatever fight you had, give each other a hug and finish it up, then you can start your next meeting afresh. Now, this is what has been happening with us, because we keep accumulating so much. And then it's carried. And then every time it gets carried forward, it's carried with interest. So what we need to do is, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, whatever we have, we need to finish it up in this lifetime. So if we have wronged somebody, better to ask forgiveness and finish it up in this lifetime. So if you can close your account in this lifetime, then you can start afresh in next lifetime. So that is why last Saturday I was insisting that this particular topic is so important. You know, that how much importance do you give to a particular event? So that means you never sleep, you know, without sorting out fights. It's very important. In every grihastha life, there will be some arguments, there will be some fights, but you can make it a rule that you never sleep over it. That means you sort it out before you go to sleep. Because otherwise, what will happen? You'll think you are done with it, but it goes to your subconscious mind, and then it goes to your unconscious mind, and then it stays there. This is something like, you know, sometimes, you know, imagine you have dirt in your living room, and suddenly a guest comes, and you are in a hurry to clean it up. So there is a dead rat, and you just clean it up, and you put the dead rat in the attic. And you think, fine, I'm clean. But what will happen is, after a couple of days, your attic will start smelling because you haven't thrown the dead rat in the trash. It is still in your attic and it will smell. So the same thing applies with our thoughts. When we are angry on somebody or we have something in our mind about somebody, if we don't finish it up, then it will start smelling just after some time. And you won't feel so happy about your chanting. You won't feel so happy about your devotional life because there's something out there which you haven't cleaned, right? I remember this very beautiful example of this a school in Japan where they once had a very nice workshop for children. They asked the students to get up and look around the classroom and see how many of the students or how many of their co-friends they are not comfortable with or they don't like. So the children all made, I don't like two people. Somebody said, I don't like four of them. I don't like five of them. And the teacher said, how many you don't like? That many boiled potatoes you will carry to school tomorrow. So the children carry those, somebody carries five potatoes, somebody carries 10 potatoes. And then they are like, madam, what are we supposed to do with the potatoes? And the teacher says, nothing. Now the exercise is you just carry these potatoes wherever you go. So when you go for playing, when you go to the restroom, wherever you go, you carry the potatoes. So the children carry it whole day and then they're so tired. And then next day they said, what are we supposed to do with the potatoes now? And madam says, you keep doing it, keep carrying it wherever you go. And what happens after 2 days, the potatoes are smelling so bad. And the children are like, why did I say that I don't like four people or I didn't like seven people? Because that much weight I have to carry. So the same thing applies in our day-to-day life also. If we carry those thoughts, they are like those stale potatoes. They start smelling bad. And we are carrying them, right? So it's like a burden with which we are carrying along. And that makes us so uncomfortable. Many of the times devotees ask, I can't concentrate on my chanting. My mind is going here and there. So now this is all interlinked because you have your mind so much saturated with material thoughts, with happiness and distress. Sometimes you're either meditating on the happy thoughts and pleasant moments, or sometimes you are unhappy about some unhappy events. So because all this is so much in your mind, then there is no place for Krishna, right? Like if you all remember in the school, or especially for those who must have taken science subject, they make you do this very simple exercise in the lab. They'll ask you to fill a beaker with water, and then they'll ask you to put some salt and mix it, and then put a little more salt and mix it. And after some time, you realize you can't put any more salt because it's saturated. And then they explain you what is a saturation point. Now, similar thing in our lives too. If we are saturated with material thoughts and material feelings, towards people around us, then there won't be any place for Krishna. So we need to remove, we need to make space, because our mind is limited. Our brain is limited. If we have too much of material consciousness, then we won't have place for Krishna consciousness. So we need to remember only that which is helpful to progress in our Krishna consciousness. For example, Thomas Alva Edison was once asked that, can you give your phone number? So for that phone number, he just dig into his bag and he opened his phone book, and then, with a lot of hard work, he took out to that page and said, okay, this is my number. And then the other person was bewildered. He said, you are such a great person. I expected that you have great memory. How come you don't even remember your own phone number? And then he said something very beautiful. He said that I want to remember only that which is important, that which is necessary. For phone number, I can always look into the phone book. So if you see the lives of great people, they will make sure that they remember only that which is necessary and helpful in Krishna consciousness. The problem with us is we remember so many things that sometimes it becomes difficult to remember the shastra, the scriptures, because we are already saturated with so many other things. So this is one thing. How much importance to be given to what? Only that much importance should be given to that particular incident. That means whatever happens, we forget and forgive quickly and finish it up. We just close that thing right there. Now, sometimes some devotees may ask, Mataji, it is easy to say that, but do you even know what she did? Or somebody may say, do you even know what he did? You know, how can I, you know, for that question, I have one simple formula that I follow in my personal life, which I'm sharing. If you have this formula in your life, it will become very easy. Give 99% for intention and give 1% for presentation. This is not only with your life partners, which is about everybody that you deal with. If you can do that, life will become so happy. Give 99% for intention and 1% for presentation. That means whenever, if you are hurt by somebody's behavior, then you always look, what is his intention? Probably he doesn't know how to present himself. Maybe his intention is good, but he doesn't know how to present himself. And if you can keep that formula for everybody that you deal in your life, then things will become so easy, right? So this is one thing. How much importance to be given to what? Now the second thing with I can also be introspection. This is so important, you know, not only for our grihastha lives, but if we want to progress in spiritual life, this is a regular thing that we need to do, is introspection. Where are we going wrong, you know? Because the problem with relationships is because we always are looking at the other person and we very rarely look in the mirror. Where are we going wrong? You know, I remember this one very beautiful story of how once Hanumanji was on a branch of a tree and he was hearing Ramayan. We all know wherever Ramayan goes on, Hanumanji is hearing. And Sant Eknath, he's very famous in Maharashtra, and he was speaking Ramayan and Hanumanji was listening to Ramayan. And at one point he's talking about Ashok Vatika and he's talking about how Sitaji was so sad. And then after the whole katha is over, Hanumanji jumps from the tree and he says, Eknathji, I really enjoyed your katha. Everything was so beautiful. But there was one mistake, you know, you made. You said that when Sitaji was in Ashok Vatika, the flowers were all white in color. So I just beg to correct you there. The flowers were not white in color. The flowers were red in color. So Eknathji says, but the flowers were white in color. It's written here, you know. And Hanumanji is arguing, but the flowers are red in color. And Eknathji is arguing. Then Hanumanji says, excuse me, do you even know who I am? I am Hanuman. So he just comes in his form and he says, I was the one who went to Ashok Vatika. So you don't argue with me. I was the one who saw those flowers. But Eknathji still says, well, but still I have to go with the scriptures. It says they were white flowers. Now Hanumanji gets all upset. So he says, come on my back, let's go to Ayodhya and speak with Sitaji. So he actually carries Eknathji and they go to Ayodhya. And then they ask Sitaji. And Sitaji very smilingly says, yes Hanuman, the flowers in Ashok Vatika were white in color. And Hanuman is like, mother, even you are supporting Eknathji. I saw the flowers, they were red in color. And then Sitaji smilingly says, Hanuman, the flowers were white, but you were in such anger and rage on Ravana that your eyes were red in color with anger. And that is why you saw those flowers as red, but they were white. So this is something, you know, in our lives too. Sometimes the people around us are really sweet people, but maybe because we are wearing that spectacles, okay, which are red in color, and we see the whole world red. So it's very important that, you know, introspection, where are we going wrong, you know, like this this example of how a mother-in-law was always criticizing a daughter-in-law that the house is very dirty, and the son is like, why is my mother criticizing my wife? She's just keeping the whole house, you know, so neatly. But then he realizes once when his mother goes for taking a bath that it was his mother's spectacles which were dirty, and she was seeing things like that. So it's very important that on a regular basis we have introspection of where are we going wrong, and we can take help of other devotees, our mentors, who help us to know where we're going wrong. But introspection is always done, like, you know, more of if we try to deeply revisit every incident where we went wrong, you know, and what we can change where. So that will be very helpful. One other exercise we can do is maybe for a minute, everybody can just close your eyes and think about all the good qualities that you are expecting in your wife or all the good qualities that you are expecting in your husband, you know, just close your eyes for a minute and just think about all those good qualities, what you are expecting. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't ask you to write down, it'll take a lot of time, but just at least a couple of 3, 4, 5 qualities that you are expecting in your wife or in your husband, right? All right, I'll drink water and I'll come back. And you keep thinking. All right, so now you can open your eyes. So you've already thought about few qualities that you're expecting in your wife or you're expecting in your husband. Now, the second step is just check how many of that qualities you have yourself. Just check it out. How many of those qualities you have yourself. And then you will be amazed that you have such great expectation from others. But how many of those qualities you carry yourself? You're not sure. So we have to be a little bit reasonable. You know, we may have great expectation from the other person, but we need to introspect, where are we going wrong and how much of those qualities we are carrying ourselves, right? So I for introspection. Now we go for the next one. Next letter, it says H. H for humility. H for being humble. That is very important for any relationship to grow well is humility. If you are humble, if you are nice, if you are sweet. You see, we also see in Srimad Bhagavatam how when the Chatuskumaras were so angry on Jai Vijay, and then Lord Vishnu comes out and then he begs pardon, and then he uses such flowery sweet words, not only the Chatuskumar's anger comes down, but they also start feeling guilty of having cursed the Lord's own servants. So no matter whatever the situation is, if somebody takes a humble position, then you know it's always going to end well. So this one quality, you know, being humble, being sweet to each other, because words have a very big impact on our life. I remember one very beautiful story of how, you know, in Maharashtra, there was this very famous saint, you must have heard about him, Vinobaji. And Vinobaji used to give such amazing lectures, you know. So once he was giving a lecture on power of speech. So he spoke on and on for 1 hour. So at the end of the lecture, the one man walked up to him and said, you spoke very well, it was nice, but somehow it's still not, you know, convincing me that speech is so important. You know, I think you exaggerated the importance of proper speech. That is what I felt in your whole class. So Vinobaji very humbly said, all right, please do come for the second session tomorrow. Don't miss it. Maybe I can convey my point better. Then he said, definitely, definitely, I'll attend the second session also. So next day when he came for the session, he came and he took his place and sat there. Now what did Vinobaji do? As soon as he began the lecture, in front of the whole public, there was few people who were sitting in the front seat. So he very humbly requested that, is it okay if that gentleman comes and sits in the front? Don't mind, because you see, he is a little mandabuddhi. That means he is a little less intelligent. You see, he has a mental problem. So he needs to sit in the first, first row. Kindly give him space. So then they made the gentleman sit in the first row. And then he completed his whole lecture. After the lecture, Vinobaji asked the gentleman, so how was my lecture today? So this man said, I don't know, how was your lecture? I have not heard your lecture because I was so upset. How did you even call me, you know, less intelligent or mandabuddhi in front of all this audience? Do you even know I have double PhD? How dare did you call me like that? I was so upset. I didn't hear your lecture. And then Vinobaji made his point. He said that, well, just yesterday you were saying that speech is not so important. So what's the big thing if I call you mandabuddhi or less intelligent? Does it matter? Because you were the one who was saying just yesterday that speech is not so important. So it's just a word. What's the big thing about it? And then this man understood, you know, the power of speech. When you say something to somebody, yeah, it does make a big lot of difference. In fact, words are so important. Many a times I give this example that if you have all the best dishes right in front of you for eating, and you have the best candlelight dinner, and you have the best music playing, and you have the best atmosphere, and all the favorite varieties of your food on the plate. But if your wife comes and tells you that, come on, pig, why not you eat? You're done. You know, though everything is conducive, but that one word which she uses for you, pig, and you are like, oh, I don't want to eat. So it is so important. The words are so important. We have to be so careful. What are the words we use when we are talking? Especially in grihastha life, sometimes we just cross the lines. You know, we are not careful. So as we were discussing last Saturday also, that no matter what kind of provocating situation, one should always draw a line somewhere and never cross it, and be very careful in what are the words we are using for the other person. Always stay humble. See, these are little small things, but that these small things weave into a beautiful relationship. In the 1900s, there was this one very famous basketball player. He was called John Wooden. Now, this John Wooden was not only a basketball player, he was a coach, very famous coach. And the world-famous basketball teams used to come to him for training. Now, he had this one very unique practice in his training, is that when he had those teams, he would never begin the training on the first day. For the first 3 days, what he would do is, he would teach the team how to wear socks. And they used to get frustrated. We know how to wear socks, you know. We don't need to learn from you. You teach us, basketball. And he's like, no. First you learn how to wear socks. And these teams were like, you know, world champions. So then he said that if you don't know how to wear the socks properly, then you will get blisters. And then you can't play basketball properly. So he had such unique way of going about it. And, you know, people may laugh at it, but sometimes it's the fundamentals that we get wrong, and then everything goes wrong. So there has to be somewhere corrections in our fundamentals. That is so important, because we may do everything right, but if the ladder is not placed at the right place, then what's the point? We may work hard to climb the ladder, but imagine you haven't even placed the ladder in the right direction, then what's the point? So the fundamental things, that is why you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave very few instructions, or rather we say his Sikshashtakam has the essence of all. Now, where this Trinadapi Suniche Nataro Ravisahi Sunamani Namanadena, these are such fundamental things. So it's not only for grihasthas, for just about anybody, you know, to go ahead in spiritual life. These are like the fundamental qualities one need to have, right? So humble, we need to be humble, we need to speak few sweet words. And sometimes things can be sorted out amicably by sweet words. For, you know, like I remember this one very beautiful story of two neighbors. Two neighbors in the countryside. And this one neighbor had lots of lambs. And this neighbor had a very ferocious dog. Now, this dog didn't have a kennel, and he used to end up jumping over the fence and kill those lambs. Now, this was going on for some time, and this man was so angry and so frustrated. So he just went and took an opinion of a retired judge. You know, what should I do with this man? You know, he doesn't control his dog, and we end up fighting regularly. So this retired judge, he gave a very good advice. He said, you can definitely complain to the sheriff, to the police, and you can make a case against him, but it will simply add for you another enemy, but it won't help you out because you are neighbors. So he gave a better solution. So he said, why not you gift him some lambs? So what did this neighbor do is, next day, he just took four of his very little cute lambs, just newly born babies, and he gifted the neighbor's son. You know, he's just a five-year-old son. And now what happened, this five-year-old son, he started playing with those lambs and he got so attached to them. Now, just so that these lambs were not attacked by his dog, he made a kennel for the dog. He made all the protection so that the dog doesn't jump on the lambs. So now they became best of the friends, because he gave the lambs as a gift, and now the dogs never disturb the neighbor's sheep. So see, how things can be sorted out, you know, in a very beautiful way, right? Instead of fighting and going to the court, they sorted out in such a beautiful way. So yes, humble, H for humble and humility, oh, it can sort out so many problems in our grihastha life. Now we'll go to A. A is adjusting with each other. A for adjusting with each other. See, the whole point is, we are all children of Krishna. We are all part and parcel of Krishna. If we really love Krishna, then we need to love everybody who is connected to Krishna. This is something like, let's say a boy and a girl has an affair, okay, and they are meeting each other secretly. And now the girl is like, let's get married. It's been a long time that we are meeting each other, let's get married. So the boy says, look, as long as we had an affair, it was okay. But now since you are talking about marriage, then let me tell you, I have a brother who is mentally retarded. I have a sister who is not married. I have a mother who is handicapped. I have a father who is bedridden. So these are my problems. So are you ready to accept this problem? Then I'm ready to marry you. And then the girl is like, that's all right. That's all right, because I love you and I'm attached to you. So I'm okay to accept everything that is connected to you. So now, why am I giving you this example? So our relationship with Krishna is also something like this. As long as, okay, we just visit temple once in a while, casually, have an affair with Krishna, is fine. But if we want to get married to Krishna, that means if we want to become pure devotee of Krishna, then Krishna says, look, you want to marry me, then you have to accept my all my children, all my, you know, my devotees. So one of my devotee may be an angry devotee, one of my devotee will be, you know, this kind of devotee, one may have this problem, one may have ego problem, one may have this, but if you want me, then you'll have to accept everybody who is connected to me, because this is all Krishna's family. So when we deal with people around us, this is what we should think, that I love Krishna and I want to be married to Krishna and I want to be part of Krishna's family, then I have to accept everybody who is part of Krishna's family. So even if it's our wife and children and mother and in mother-in-law, father-in-law, friend, they're all part of Krishna's family. And we need to accept them all if we love Krishna. So we should try and accept everybody and adjust with everybody with that attitude in our mind. It's very important. So A for adjusting. We have to adjust. Right? Because as I keep saying, everybody cannot be sarva guna sampanna, 100% perfect. Only Krishna is 100% perfect. So we need to adjust with whatever we have. And also, whenever there is an adjustment that we need to go through, there is one thing that we can keep in our mind, is this is temporary situation. You see, when you have that thing in mind, it becomes so easy. See, I remember, you know, 20 years ago, my elder one was very young and I was traveling from Vizag to Bhubaneswar. And my husband was in Puri and I was supposed to travel with my little one. It was the first time I was traveling alone. I was so uncomfortable. There were lots of people in the train and I was sweating and I can't still forget. It was such a bad trip that I had. But every time that 4 or 5 hours that I was in that trip, I knew that it was temporary and very soon I'm going to get down and my husband will be waiting for me at the station. And that gave me such comfort and courage to go through that whole journey. See, in our lives also, if we start feeling that I'm permanent in this world and all the relationships are permanent and the situation is permanent, then it becomes difficult. But if you have this firm faith that everything is a passing phase and this is not permanent and you are temporary, then it'll be so easy for you to forgive, forget and adjust. Right? See, you know, once this Ekanaji, Sant Ekanath, there are amazing stories connected with Sant Ekanathji and how he used to give such practical lessons from his own life. So once it so happened that somebody approached Ekanathji and said that, how do you manage to be so pure? Your consciousness is so pure. Your teachings are so divine. How come you're not attracted to commit sinful activities? How do you manage? So Sant Ekanathji gave a very tough and a rough answer. He said, look, don't sit and glorify me. I can see that you're going to die in 7 days. Just have 7 more days. So instead of wasting your time sitting and glorifying me, just get your life together, because you just have 7 more days and you're going to die. Now this man was like, oh my God, I just came to attend a satsang and this is the kind of news I get and I'm going to die. And he was under complete depression, and then he goes home and he makes all arrangements, you know, his life insurance policies or whatever he had to do, divides his property, who will get what, everything he finished. And then he started, you know, after settling everything, you know, within a 2-3 days he got mentally ready that now I'm going to die, and he's just chanting and, you know, spending his time very pious way. And then on the 6th day, right, he was supposed to die on the 7th day. So on the 6th day, Sant Eknathji visits him to, you know, at his house, and he asks him, so how are you? Is everything fine with you? So he's like, what can be fine? You know, I'm just like waiting for my death. You know, this is what happened. And then Sant Eknathji asked a very beautiful question. So how many sinful activities did you commit last 6 days? So he's like, Swamiji, what is this question? How many sinful activities I committed? Why will I commit any sinful activities? I'm going to die, you know. Just 7 days I had, you know. Why will I commit sinful activities? I was planning so many things and I chanted this many rounds and I'm reading scriptures. So Eknathji said that just like because you had in mind that I just have 7 more days to live, you didn't commit any sinful activities. Similarly, it's not about 7 days or 70 years. A person who has in his mind that I'm going to die, I'm not permanent here, will never commit sinful activities because he knows he's going to die. So it was so beautiful. So he understood. He said, this is the answer to your question which you asked me, that how I'm able to remain so pure and not commit sinful activities, because I'm always looking forward that I may die anytime, and you know, I'm in that preparation. So that is why I live a pure life, you know, a Krishna-centered life. So this is something, adjusting. We need to adjust with each other. Also, for A, you can also take another quality is, don't assume things. Don't make assumptions. Don't become judgmental. Please communicate. Please communicate with each other. Please be open. Talk to each other. Don't make assumptions. You know this famous, very popular story doing its rounds in the WhatsApp groups, you know, about how there were this couple who were married for 25 years and the wife was always making this very beautiful, very delicious cake for breakfast, and she always gave the upper portion, soft portion to the husband, and she always took the harder portion, you know, when you bake a cake there is this hard crust in the, you know, in the bottom. For 25 years she sacrificed, and one fine day she thought, it's too much now, I've been sacrificing for a long time now, today I'm going to take the soft part and give him the crust. So she just takes the soft part of the cake and gives him the hard part. And then to her surprise, her husband makes a statement. He says, thank God, after 25 years I got what I wanted, because I never liked the soft part of the cake. I always liked the hard part of it, and I've been sacrificing it all along, you know. So now, you see, wife was thinking that she was sacrificing and husband was thinking that he was sacrificing. The only problem was they never communicated with each other. They just need to ask each other. So this is one thing, you know, sometimes the couples lack is assumptions. This is simply make assumptions. You know, there is this, there was this one married couple who were newly married, and the husband was a little bossy. So, you know, he was a little arrogant also. So every time, you know, whatever he instruct his wife, you know, he'll make this statement. Do this, otherwise you know what I'll do. Do this, otherwise you know what I will do. So his wife was like terrified, you know, because for everything he will say, so is my coffee ready? Otherwise you know what I will do. Is my hot water for bath ready? Otherwise you know what I will do. And one day she got all frustrated and she just went and asked her friend, you know, I'm so afraid of my husband the moment he walks in at home, because for everything he will say, otherwise you know what I will do, otherwise you know what I will do. So this friend was a little intelligent. She said, you know what, today, you know, you go home, and if your husband says that, you know, otherwise you know what I will do, ask him what you will do. So she said, fine. So next day morning, her husband, you know, as usually got up and, where is my coffee? And did you make the hot water ready for my bath? Otherwise, you know what I will do. And she gathered all courage and she went and asked, "If I don't make the hot water ready for you, what will you do?" And then the husband said, "Nothing. I'll take bath with cold water. What's a big thing? I'll take bath with cold water." Now the wife was like, "Oh my God, so all along I've been so afraid of him. What is he going to do? What is he going to do?" And this is what he says, "If you don't give me hot water bath, I'll take cold water bath. What's the big thing?" So don't assume things. Don't assume things and don't make assumptions, you know. Just ask, just communicate with each other, just talk it out. Sometimes, you know, the problems which seem like too big are only because of lack of communication. Just sit and talk to each other. Just give time to each other. Talk to each other, right? Now, the other A, it's 9:15 and today we have to also have question answers, right? So not other A, we directly go to the other letter. And I try to make it a little shorter. Right. Next is S. S means serve each other. Serve each other. Because as grihasthas, when you make statements like, "I love my partner, I love my husband, I love my wife," but love means serve. If you love somebody, you serve the person. So it's very important. You know, it's not just about giving cards to each other or giving flowers to each other. But when you love somebody, you want to serve the person. You want to follow the instructions of the person. You want to make the person happy. So this is one thing. Of course, now sometimes some people may come up with the question, "But I serve him, but he doesn't, or she doesn't, you know, I'm so nice to her." Now, let me tell you one very simple formula in your mind. If you have this example in your mind, you will never regret in serving anybody for that matter. Rather, you will stop having any expectations from anybody. Now, I'll tell you. Let's say you go to a shop. Now, when you go to a shop, you know, there's a salesman who shows you saris and clothes and dresses. Now, I don't know about the West, but in India, it's such a tiring job, you know, the salesman job, because you end up showing 100 sari and then the lady will like, "Oh, I didn't like anything," and she'll just walk away. You know, this is a typical way in the Indian shopping. But I tell you, no matter how much the salesman is frustrated because he's been showing saris and saris and saris and then you just walk away, "I didn't like anything, it's not in my budget, I didn't like the color." But he will never swear on you, never use bad words, never show his displeasure. He'll still be smiling. "No problem, madam, that's all right. Shall I show you something else? Shall I show you something else?" Even though even if he's feeling bad about it, he'll always have the smiling thing. Now, what's the logic behind? Tell me, why does he have a smiling face? Though this lady is causing trouble last 1 hour, you know, she's drinking his blood, seeing so many saris and she doesn't buy even one. But you know, why does he have that smile? Because he's always looking at the boss, you know, that the boss is looking at me and I'm not going to get my salary from this lady, I'm going to get my salary from the boss. So if my boss is happy, I'm happy. What do I have to do with this lady, whether she buys the sari or she doesn't buy the sari? Because my salary is paid by my boss and I want to make him happy. The same thing happens in our lives. What we are trying to do is make Krishna happy. That's about it. We want to make Krishna happy. So, when we deal with people and they're not nice to us, that's all right. That's all right. They're not the ones who are paying our salaries anyway. It's Krishna who's going to pay our salary. So, why bother? Just be nice to them. That's about it. You be nice to them because your salary is going to be paid by your boss. And that is Krishna. So, that is one thing. And every time that you deal with, you know, anybody, just keep this point in your mind and you will feel so happy about it. Okay, that's all right. Even if he doesn't. See, the problem is we have lots of expectations and our mind works like a mind of a businessman. We always want something back for our good behavior, something back for whatever, you know. See, everything is not an investment. You can't look at everything that way. I've been so nice to her, but she hasn't been. I've helped her so much, but she hasn't been. He hasn't been. The problem is we always want from them. But the problem is our supplier is the boss on the top. So why worry about these people, right? And The other thing is, see, when you go to a bank, let's say you go to a bank and you deposit money, okay? Let's say I deposited 10,000 rupees in the bank today. Now, I'm asking you all of you a question. And I have deposited this 10,000 in the bank, but when I go for withdrawing the money, will I get those same notes which I had deposited? No, I'll get any note, whatever the cashier has. Maybe I deposited 10,000 in the currency of 2,000 rupees notes, but maybe the cashier will give me 100 rupees notes, you know, in that way he'll give my 10,000 back. It's not sure that whatever way I have deposited the currency, I'll get it the same. I'll get my 10,000 back for sure, but it may not come, you know, the same notes which I have deposited. Similarly, sometimes be nice to people, but it's not sure that the same people will be nice to us. But we have made our deposit and definitely we'll get our deposit back. But it may not be from the same person. It may be from some other person. But our problem is we stick to that person. But I was nice to him. But I was nice to him. And our tape record is stuck there. But I was nice to him. Forget about it. Yeah, you were nice to him. That's all right. Lord has made a note of it. So now even if you don't get it back from him, you will get it back from somebody. You will get back your deposit. Don't worry about that. But it's just that it may not come back from the same person. It may come from some other person. So don't get so much worried about it, you know, that I'm nice to this person and he's not nice to me. Forget about him. Just make your deposits and you're going to get back. You're going to get back. It is a deposit you have made and Lord is noticing. So if you have that in mind, oh, things become so beautiful. So just keep making sweet deposits in everybody's life. Be nice to everybody and you will get it back, right? So this is one thing. Serve. If you love, then you serve each other, right? Next, we have gone to T. T means tolerate. 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 You see this in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, there is this, I think it's chapter 14, sloka number 8, where Brahma is making this very beautiful stuti, you know, after the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And this very beautiful sloka that Brahma puts there, you know, he says that tatte no kampa susamikshamano. It's one of my very favorite sloka, wherein, you know, Brahma is saying that, you know, for one who tolerates, you know, whatever situation comes in life as a result of his previous karma, and he simply waits for your mercy, he becomes dayabhak, rightly eligible for your mercy. And in that sloka purport, there is a summary by Sridhar Maharaj, and he makes such a beautiful point. He says, inheriting the property of the father, the son doesn't need to do much. He simply, the legitimate child or the legitimate son doesn't need to do much. He simply needs to stay alive. That's it. If he can somehow stay alive, then he will definitely inherit the property of his father. He doesn't need to make any special endeavor for that. And I thought that was so beautiful. What we simply need to do in this temporary world that we are in, so samikshamano, just stay there. That's it. Just stay alive. Just be there somehow. Tolerate. And definitely Krishna is going to note it down. He's going to acknowledge that. So whatever situations that we you know pass through, we just need to tolerate. Also, you see, as I was telling in the last class also, that men and women are two different species. They are made up of different nature. See, woman is made up of more of love and care. Men is made up of more of logic and ego. It's not to demoralize or put somebody down, but that is how they are made. That's how their nature is, right? So, you see, that is why, you know, whenever the women think, they'll always be very emotional, they're very sentimental, and men are always more logical. They think everything with lots of logic. You see, you know, when sometimes, you know, when the husbands are home, and you know, if the wife is buttering him a little too much, you know, what can I do for you? Shall I get you some water? How are you today? How was your day at work? He will not take it, you know, he will definitely take it with a pinch of salt. He will be like, why is she buttering me so much? You know, what does she want? So he will not get carried away with emotion. You know, that is how the men are. You know, even if she may not have any intention, you know, but definitely he will think everything with logic. Why is she talking so sweetly with me today? What does she want? Why is she behaving like that? Everything they will think with logic, right? And women are more emotional. They're very emotional people. You see, that is why, even though there is so much of, you know, sometimes lots of fighting between husband and wife, you know, next day morning, if the wife is getting ready for a party or somewhere, she'll be the first one to ask the husband, how am I looking today? Is this sari suiting me? How's the color? Is it nice? She will ask the husband. But you will never ever see any husband asking wife, how is this shirt? Am I looking good? He will not ask. Because men have that ego. Because he is worried that, you know, if she says I'm not looking good, or if she says my stomach is protruding out of my shirt, he won't like it. He won't like that comment. So that's the thing with, you know, men. And with women, she just had a fight with you, but she'll still look for your opinion. Is this sari fine? Am I looking okay? That's woman's nature. You see, men, they tend to forget birthdays, marriage anniversaries, or, you know, everything. They'll sometimes forget to pick up children from school. They'll forget so many things. Because when they go to office, then they just concentrate on office. At that time, they'll forget everything about household things. But women simultaneously can do so many things. Even if she's working in an office, she will remember, oh, I have to soak the chana dal for cooking tomorrow. Did I make preparation for the idli? What happened? Did I pick up? Oh, 100 things she can work simultaneously, but the men cannot. So it's not that the men love the women less, or they don't love their wife, but it's just that they can't remember things like birthdays or anniversaries. It's not them, because they are a little differently made, you know. Like the basic difference, you see, the men are more of a goal-oriented, you know. They just fix their mind on the goal. But the women are more process-oriented. They enjoy the whole process. But the men, they simply focus on the goal, you know. So I'll give you this example. See, let's say, for example, you know, your wife goes for shopping, you know. Let's say she goes for buying a sari. Now, the whole point is that when she comes home after buying sari, she will make you listen the whole process what went in buying the sari. So she'll start with the whole process of how she took a Ola cab and a Uber cab, and how the cab, you know, took so much time, and then how she ended up going to this particular shop, and then what color she selected. Now, because they enjoy this whole process, you know. But the problem is men don't like so much of talking, you know. So they are like, that's all right, but did you buy the sari? You know, they just want the ending of it. They don't want the whole story, you know. But the women are like, you know, but then what happened? I went to that shop, you know, but then, you know, that blue color sari was, you know, the navy blue color, and then there was a light blue color, and this man is like, all right, so did you buy the sari? And she's like, no, not the blue, you know. Then I saw the olive green one, and then I saw the yellow one, and this man is still counting. All right, all the colors are over. Well, how many colors more I have to listen to? And then she will go on and on, you know. And then finally this man is like, all right, so did you buy the red sari? And she's like, no, you know, red doesn't suit me. And he's already vexed up, you know. Oh my God, I need to hear the whole thing. And then, you know, I ended up buying this green sari because you gave me the budget of $10, but this sari was $15. And believe me, the man is, you know, whispering in his mind that it's all right even if you buy a $20 sari, but I don't want to go through listening this whole process what happened, you know, which sari you selected and what happened, you know. He doesn't want to listen this whole thing, you know. But if you don't listen, she will lose the whole pleasure of buying the sari. Because for her, buying the sari itself was not such a big thing. The whole process that went on buying that sari was so important for her. What happened, how she went, with whom she went, what she bought, and how she came back. So, because they are process-oriented, they enjoy the whole... That's why you see women, they are very good in gossiping. Because they love to share the whole thing that happened. So, my advice to the women is that if you love your husbands, you know, try to keep your talk a little short, because they don't like it, believe me. And whatever that gossip part that you want to do about your sari and where you went and which shopping mall was more cheaper, you can always do it with your friends. You have, friends are for that purpose. You can talk it out with your other ladies' friends and they will appreciate it. But if you can excuse your husbands from that, they will feel so relieved. And my advice for the men is that if you love your wife, kindly listen to the whole process. There is no escape from this. They'll feel so happy, you know. Just tolerate, you know. Just tolerate, you know. You can, you know what, my tip is just be physically present and mentally absent. But keep nodding and give some expression, and they will love it that you have listened to the whole process of how you bought that sari, you know. Take my word for that. So, you see, these are little examples in life, you know, that can bring about so much nectar in your relationship, you know. If you're just listening to your wife, she'll feel so happy that he heard the whole thing, you know. So, like that, if you can make little adjustments, because you are two different species, as I put it, you know, and you have different kinds of wants, right? So, if you understand the other species well, then, you know, that is a way you can interact with each other, right? All right, so T for tolerate. T for tolerate. Don't keep this attitude of tit for tat. This is how she was with me, or that is how he behaved with me. Don't do that. Don't do that. And whenever you are upset with your wife, or whenever you are upset with your husband, you can remember this one point. See, when you go to a bank, you make a lot of deposits. But it's not always about deposits. You also withdraw sometimes. So in your relationships also, you should always, whenever there is a withdrawal from the other partner, always remember the deposits the partner made, right? Because she made your life so beautiful. And all the good things that she did for you. I know, and you can remember all the good things that your husband did for you. And you know, when you remember that, then you will not mind these small withdrawals that you make in between. So, tolerate each other, forgive each other, and especially ladies. This is one quality that the ladies should have in abundance. The scriptures say that, you know, this narasya abharna rupam, rupasya abharnam gunam, gunasya abharna gnanam, gnanasya abharna shama. The quality the essence of a lady is her beauty, how beautiful she is. And the essence of beauty is quality. And the essence of quality is knowledge. And the essence of knowledge is forgiveness. Yeah, see, you see, so women have to be more tolerant. In fact, I don't know if I spoke about it in my last class, but when Sita Mata was in the forest and with Lord Ram, you know, she had nothing to do in the forest, what to do whole day. So she used to go to Atri Anusuya's ashram, and she used to help Mother Anusuya cutting vegetable, I mean, whatever fruits and roots available in the forest, help her in cooking. So she was just a 14-year-old little girl, and she was so... so nice. So Mother Anusuya, she was once very happy with Sita Mata, and she said, "Sita, I want to give you something. Tell me what you want. I'm so happy with your seva." So Sita Mata said, "Mother, I don't want anything. Just give me some good advice. How can I be a good wife?" So Anusuya gives such amazing advice. We can't go deep into that, but very quickly I'll tell you four important things she told that a good wife should have. First thing she said, that a good wife should be chaste. That is a minimum quality. Second thing she said, that a good wife should be like an axle, just like an axle connects all parts of the chariot, or just like a thread, you know. She has to connect the husband's family and her family, you know, very beautifully. She's like a connecting, you know, to both the families. And third thing she said that she should be very careful about secrets. If her husband shares any secret with her, it should be as if something is thrown in a deep well. It should never come out. She should be very careful in not sharing it with others. And the fourth point she said is that she should be patient and tolerant. Now, this it's in itself is a big class which I would not jump into the instructions Mother Anusuya gave to Sita Devi. But yes, so this is one quality she says that a wife should have is patience and tolerance. Very important, especially for women. We need to be more tolerant, you know, because we play a very important role in the household. You are like the, you know, the top person. You know, she can make or break a family. It's so much in her hand. She has the power. So she has to be very patient and very tolerant. Next, hedge. Yeah, we came to hedge. So hedge again can be happy, can be also hopeful, can be also being, you know, positive all the time. So in Grihastha life, you should be very happy, very, very, very positive. You should have the right kind of a attitude. It's very important, you know, you shouldn't be very negative. You should always take things very positively. Everything is a passing phase, and see, it's also the way we look at things. You see, I remember some time back, I think it was last year, I went for a program, and from there, when I was coming back, you know, the host of this house program, he had many cars, and you know, a lot of us were coming with me back to the temple. So I just, you know, I mean, I thought any of the car is fine because they were all his cars parked there. So I just opened the door of a car and he said, Mataji, don't climb on that car. You know, that car you shouldn't climb, you climb some other car. And I said, what's wrong? Car is a car, any car. No, Mataji, that car is very inauspicious, you know, because that car of mine, it had 3 accidents. So I don't want you should climb in that car. Why not you climb in the other car? So I told him that, Prabhuji, maybe I should climb on this car only. Now that you said this had accident. Then he said, why? I said, I feel this car is very auspicious because even after 3 accidents, it is still surviving, you know. Nothing happened to the car. It's still there. So I think if I go in this car, then there will be no problem. There will be no accidents, you know. So I better go in this car. So why I'm giving this example is that it's just a change of attitude. For him, it was an inauspicious car because it had 3 accidents. And I told him to look at it in a different way. I said, this is a very auspicious car because even though it had 3 accidents, you know, you know, it's still fine. The car is fine. Even though there was accident, no problem with the car. So it's just a shift in attitude. Just a shift in attitude. So this is very careful on how positively you look at things, right? Like this common example we give of how you see a glass half full or half empty. That's about it. So one secret of having a happy household life is being very positive, very hopeful about things, and not to get into depression, right? So be always very positive, very positive. Keep looking for good things. I remember, you know, once somebody was asking Maharaj, you know, Maharaj, there's so much problem in this temple. This is a problem. That is a problem. There's so much backbiting and this person is disturbing me. And Maharaj gave a very good answer. He said, the temple you are going to, do they have Mangala Arati, Darshana Arati, Sandhya Arati, all the Aartis? And he said, yeah, yeah. Do they offer bhoga to the deities? Yeah. They worship the deities nicely? Yeah. Do they distribute books? Yeah. Do they give prasadam to the devotees? Yeah. Do the devotees dance in front of the deities? Yeah. So then Maharaj said, well, then how come you didn't look at all these good things? Why are you only looking at the bad side of it, right? Why don't you look at the good side of it when there are so many good things there? So same thing in our life too. You know, we are always looking at things we don't have or we lack. But if we can start counting our blessings, oh, this I have this and I have that and I have this, you'll feel so happy. So being happy is to look at the bigger picture, look at the bigger picture, right? So, like, you know, it is said that keep the biggest challenge is to keep the biggest challenge as the biggest challenge. Now, the biggest challenge is how do we get out of this material world? That is the biggest challenge. And the biggest challenge in our life is that we are not able to keep that biggest challenge as the biggest challenge in our life. And we are getting so busy with the small, small challenges that we have in our life. So, if we focus our mind that, you know, we have a higher goal to achieve, then we will very easily give up this small, small inconveniences that we face in our lives, right? Going to the last A is acceptance, A for acceptance. So, accepting everything as Krishna's plan, should accept everything as Krishna's plan, because if something is not going according to your plan, that means it is going according to Krishna's plan, and Krishna is more intelligent, and Krishna is our well-wisher, and Krishna will never do injustice to us. So if we can keep that in mind and accept every situation in our life as Krishna's blessings, and we stop playing the blame game and just accept everything as our karma. You know, I remember this funny joke which I had read in the, you know, small book Tinkle. In my childhood, we used to read a lot of stories from that. I don't know if they're still publishing that book, Tinkle Digestion. And we used to have a very funny character, Mullah Nasruddin, in that, you know, book Tinkle. So once it so happened that a mullah was trying to steal something from somebody's house in the middle of the night, and he was caught by the police. So the police took him to the judge, and now he's in front of the judge, and judge is like, you are under arrest and I'm going to give you punishment now. Do you want to say anything in your defense? And Mullah Nasruddin says, definitely, sir, kindly arrest the ice cream shop owner. So, because he's also part of this. So then they called the ice cream shop owner and they said, are you also the part of the theft? And this ice cream owner is like, my God, I have nothing to do with this theft. You know, I haven't done anything. I'm a simple ice cream vendor. What do I have to do with this man? So then Mullah Nasruddin goes explaining. He said, look, that fateful day when I did this theft in this person's house, in the morning I had eaten ice cream. And because I had eaten ice cream, I got cough and cold. And because I got cough and cold, when I was robbing them in the night, you know, I coughed. And because I coughed, the owners of the house woke up. And that is how they called police. And here I am under arrest. So you see, the whole fault is because of this ice cream vendor, because he sold the ice cream to me. And the whole court was like, this is crazy. Now we laugh at it, but I guess this is what we do in our lives also. We always blaming the others. You know, actually this happened because my husband is like this and he doesn't do this, and my wife is not cooperative, and then she is not devotee, and she is not chanting, and he is not. Oh my God, we have so many excuses. So we need to stop that blame game and just accept things as they are. You know, I want to give you this one formula. You know, if you learn these three words in your life, everything will be so beautiful. You can just write these three words somewhere in your kitchen, in your drawing room, you know. Just these three words. It is okay. That's about it. If you can learn these three things, it is okay. That's it. For everything, if you can have that attitude, that's all right. It is okay. Then life can be so beautiful. So learn to say it is okay. And who doesn't have a problem? Everybody in this world has a problem. I'll tell this one last story and culminate here. There was this one man who went to a sadhu. And he said, I have this problem and I have that problem and I have this problem. And Sadhuji said, all right, I'll sort out all your problems. Do me one favor. I don't sort out problems in the night. I need to take rest. Come tomorrow morning. But this night, just render this one service to me. And he said, what can I do for you? He said, I have 100 camels. Make sure that everybody sits down, you know, and takes rest. And then you can go and take rest. And tomorrow morning, come to me. I'll sort out your problem. He said, fine. So next day morning, he comes to the sadhu. So sadhu is like, so how are you today? You had a good night's sleep? And this man is like to sadhu, you know, are you crazy? How can I have a good night's sleep? Because you told me I'm supposed to sleep after all the camels sit down. And do you think it is easy to make 100 camels sit down? Because one camel sits and the other camel gets up, and the other camel sits and the other camel gets up. How can you make all the camels sit down? So whole night I could not sleep. So then the sadhu said that this is how it is with life. You know, when you sort out one problem, then the other problem comes up. And when you sort out the other problem, then another problem will come up. There will be never such a moment in your life when there will be no problem at all. So learn to accept and live with it, right? Because this material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. We cannot be 100% happy in this life. There will be always some or the other problem. So we, like now the WHO says, we need to learn to live with corona. They said, learn to live with it. It's not going to go away. So yeah, so problems are like that in our life. We just need to learn to live with it. Take it positively and just laugh it out. Laugh it out. That's about it. There's no 100% solution, right? And who didn't have problem with his wife, or who didn't have problem? Let me tell you, in the stories of great devotees, you see Narsim Mehta. Have you heard about Narsim Mehta? He was a great saint in Gujarat, you know, just like you have Purandar Das and you have Annamaya and you have, you know, Tukaram. He's a great saint in Gujarat, and he had problem with his wife. His wife was not very cooperative, you know. So Narsim Mehta had a problem with his wife, and Tukaram had a problem with his wife. His wife was always ready to, you know, shout at him and always complaining. Jaidev Goswami had a problem with his wife, and Srila Prabhupada had a problem with his wife. And you know what? If you have a problem with your wife, don't worry. It's a symptom that maybe you'll become a great devotee somewhere. Because all the great devotees had problem with their wives, you know. So if you have a problem with your wife, then you're going to become great devotee sometime. Yeah, that's a prediction, you see. So jokes apart. So here we end our acronym Grihastha. You know, Grihastha. So adjust, accept. Don't assume, and note it for tats, tolerate, and that's it. At the end, it is you for him and he for you. So you have a companion with you in your Krishna conscious life, and don't take this privilege very cheaply. Just value each other's association, and together try to be happy and, you know, on your way back home, back to Godhead. Thank you so much. I'll end it here, and I'll open it for questions. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Okay, the question is that it is sometimes difficult to close the flight on the same day, is it? Or sometimes the topic is... Yeah. Because sometimes if it is too intense, it is difficult. But as far as possible, one should try to keep it as brief as possible, because these things do have a lot of effect on our consciousness. Because the more we meditate on it, you see, and the more we keep thinking about it, it definitely does disturb our consciousness, and definitely we do go a little down into our Krishna consciousness. This is something like, you see, you're taking steps forward towards Krishna, and every time that we engage in these things, we're just going one step back and one step back. So the moment you quickly pick it up and go ahead, it's better. But if it's not possible, definitely it's going to affect your consciousness. Now, of course, I can't make a general statement about it. If you say it's not possible, you may be having your own reasons. The nature of fight may be such, but as far as possible, try to keep it as brief, if not the same day, at least the very next day. Don't postpone it, is what I'm trying to say. Sometimes you just postpone it, you know, but don't postpone it. You know, it is like a, you see, salad, when you cut the salad, you should eat it immediately, right? But if you, pickles, you should not make it into a pickle, you know. Keep it and keep it and keep it in your mind. Don't do that, is what I'm, in principle, trying to say, you know, not like literally. What I'm trying to say is that don't keep it for a longer time in your mind. Just get over with that. Forget, forgive, whatever you have to do, and the quicker you can do about it, do it and finish it up. Don't keep it lingering in your mind, is what I was trying to say.
Okay,
Yeah, this question is asked all the time because everybody is so worried that if it actually happens to be true, and sometimes some people want it to be true because they have worked so hard this lifetime in changing their husband in the way they want him to be, and they have customized him in the way they want, and they don't want to take the trouble of in the next lifetime to repeat the process with a new person. I remember many times, Mataji is, they end up telling, Mataji, my husband was so nice, when I got married, but now he's completely changed. And I tell him, and I tell them, who changed him? It's you. Because the day you get married, you will start with the color of his shirt. Why do you wear this shirt? This doesn't suit you. This hairstyle is not correct. Why did you speak like that in my uncle's party? Why did you eat with your fork and not spoon? Why didn't you get, you will make sure that he's been corrected. Every aspect of him is corrected, like a potter does with the pot, Speak like this, talk like this, walk like this, smile like this, don't look like this, don't look here, don't look there, don't spend. And then, poor fellow, he's changed. And then after 20 years of your marriage, you will say, but he's completely changed now, He was so nice when we got married. But madam, who changed him? You changed the whole person. He's not the person who he was when you got married to. So don't worry about these 7 lifetimes because... usually, what happens, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatante kalivaram tam tam iveti kaunteya sada tada bhava bhavita. So, in case if they are very elevated devotees and they think about Krishna when they leave this body, definitely they'll go back to Krishna's dham. And if they're very attached to each other, then the husband may become wife and the wife may become husband. And it's also possible that sometimes they may come as mother and son, and then sometimes they may come as, different forms of relationship. It's not necessary that they will always come, in the same relationship as husband and wife. But definitely they will be born near to each other and they will definitely come into contact because there may be so many balanced karmas that you need to finish up with that person. If you haven't heard a good lecture on ideal grihastha life and if you haven't implied the instructions of scriptures and if you have not finished your accounts with him, definitely he will come back in some way or the other. So definitely you will meet each other, but not sure that it will be in the same way. Now scriptures having many of the places mentioned that 7 lifetimes you have the same husband, same wife, is a I don't know how authentic it is. I'm not sure. I've not read about it much. I've just heard it from the other elders, and I always believed that they said that just to make you, that be careful and behave nicely because you have to get along with him another 7 lifetimes is what I believe. I don't know what's the shastric reference of that. Yeah, so you are saying that familiarity brings contempt. Is it because we are too familiar with our family members that we start using certain words which we'll never use it outside? Yeah, that may be one reason. That is why last Saturday class I was giving this example of, how you need to train yourself in such a way that you won't end up doing mistakes during provocating situations. You need to be very careful. If you are always very respectful to each other, then even during those situations, you will always be respectful. One tip that I can give for sorting out this problem is that whenever you get angry or you are in such a situation, what you should always imagine is that, imagine if your Guru Maharaj is standing next to you. Will you talk the same words with your wife or with your husband? Will you use the same vocabulary? So always remain conscious that, if at all my Guru is standing next to me, or if the Supreme Lord is standing next to me, will I do that? So the problem is all these things happen because we are disconnected from Krishna. That's a basic problem actually. Because if we are conscious of Krishna as Paramatma in our hearts, and if we are conscious that Krishna is always with us and listening to every word that we are speaking, we will be so conscious of what we are talking, because we will be shy. How can I say like this in front of Krishna? Krishna is hearing me. But the problem is we are so disconnected. We are not even conscious that Krishna is listening to us. So that is why we just speak whatever we speak. So that is one thing. And other thing is that even in your day-to-day life, even if it looks very superficial, calling your wife so respectfully or addressing your husband so respectfully, do it. Do it. Over the time, you will get used to speaking with each other like that. In English, for everybody we say you or, but in Hindi, there are, for people who are younger to you, you say tum. For people who are elder to you, you say aap. Now, my husband, he's elder to me, but the day I got married to him till today, he always uses aap for me, always. And initially, when we were newly married, it was so embarrassing for me when he says aap, because in my family, the husband doesn't say aap. It will be on a different basis. But my husband, he said, no, but this is how I speak. And over the time, of course, I got used to, but that is so sweet. I mean, just calling each other so respectfully, So if you just make that habit, sometimes you may feel, oh, but it looks so superficial. How can you, your wife, how can you call her respectfully or your husband? But if you make that as a rule, it'll be nice actually, because ultimately both of you are Vaishnavas and no harm in respecting each other, right? Respecting a Vaishnava. So just develop it. That's it. It's a habit. It's a habit. So these two tips are immediately coming to my mind. I can elaborate on that, but I want to take up more questions and see what are the different questions the devotees have. Right. So as I understand the question is, how do we understand the intention of the person? Yeah. So what you can do is, as I said, communication. So sometimes we are very judgmental and we jump to conclusions. See, I'll tell you, when it is something to do with us, we become lawyers, and fight our case. And when it is something to do with others, we become judge. And we immediately pass a judgment. So don't become a judge. Be a lawyer. Be a lawyer for your husband or be a lawyer for your wife. So whenever you see which apparently doesn't seem right to your, outrightly to your naked eyes, always give that benefit of doubt. And okay, maybe that may be reason. That is why she behaved like this, So first of all, cool down yourself. See, sometimes imagine there is a particular situation and your wife said something which was not proper for that particular atmosphere. So at that very moment, first of all, cool yourself down. Okay, maybe this was not her intention. And then, approach her, but at the right time, right moment, whatever the situation, and ask her that, this is what happened and this is what I felt. So what exactly happened? And then, she may explain to you what exactly has happened. Because sometimes the pratyaksha praman is, you can't rely so much on it, Sometimes things are not as they seem to. There may be something hidden behind. Because whatever we see in any situation is just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much below it, right? So even if somebody has not reacted nicely with you, definitely there is something underlying, some previous conditioning or some preconceived notion or some previous experience with you which has prompted the person to act in such and such way. So always give benefit of doubt. Think about 100 reasons they must have had in mind while doing that particular thing. Go and communicate. That will make you feel more better than the other person actually, because you'll not feel bad about it. No, there must be some reason. Always think about it. There must be some reason. Have patience, cool down, and then talk about it. So the only solution is that go and communicate with the person. This is what happened, and what it is about. This is one thing. Don't jump to conclusions.
Judging you incorrectly. So how to deal with that?
So the question is that if you are not judgmental, but the others are judgmental about you, so then how do you react to it? Yeah, you see, I just now answered that when it is, we become lawyers when it is our case, but in others' case, we become judge. And sometimes when people start judging us, we become very conscious of it. But I think acceptance, again, here also I feel it's communication only. Clarify if it's affecting you so much. The best thing would be none of us will be on that level where we ignore people's judgment. Some way or the other we are affected and we feel bad when people judge us wrong way. So we want to clarify so we can. But you see, there is no one line answer for this. There is so many things. One thing is you understand you are temporary. One thing is you understand it's your karma. One thing you understand is that everybody has a preconceived notion, a preconditioning, and they may be having some past experience with you in the same line. That is why they are judging you in that way. There may be so many underlying reasons why they are judging you in that particular way. So if you are really affected by it, then just go and clarify. And if not, then the best thing would be ignore, but I don't know how many of them can do that. Again, it all depends upon how is our connection with Krishna. If the connection with Krishna is very strong, then it really doesn't make difference what people think about us or judge about us. See, it is like if somebody is very rich, let me tell you, very rich, and then he goes to a departmental store, he buys something, and sometimes in India they give this coupon. You fill up your name and number and you put it, and then they take out a lucky draw and you win something. Now imagine if somebody is very rich and a lucky coupon came out, and then you call the person and you tell, look, you have won, $5 lucky coupon. Now the thing is that the man is so rich that for him $5 will be nothing. Now you may be all excited, you won $5, you are so excited about it, but that man may have no excitement because he's so rich that $5 doesn't make any difference to him. Now, because he's already rich, this is not making difference. So similarly, when we are very much connected to Krishna, what the other people think about us doesn't make much difference, because you're already so rich with Krishna's love and you're already so rich with that connection that really doesn't make much difference what this person thinks about me or what that person thinks about me. The problem is that we are looking out for appreciation from people, from peers outside, and that makes us so vulnerable. Because what they are going to judge is what we also, tag ourselves, or think about ourselves, the way people value us. And that makes us so weak. Because, in Hindi they says, they have this saying, "Sabse bada rog kya kahenge log." You're always worried about what will people say, what will people think, what will people say. And that makes us mad. So we're always worried about, what he'll say or what she will think about me. But actually we must be worried about what our guru is thinking about us, what Krishna is thinking about us. And if we can have that strong connection, and if we become rich with Krishna consciousness, to such a level, then nothing will affect. See, this is something like, this business people, the way they count money, I don't know if you have seen. They count it in, so meticulously, so focused way that at that time, even if you go and swear some words on him, he will not hear. After the last note is counted, he will look at you and say, so what you were saying? I didn't hear, I was counting. See, because he was so focused on counting that what you said, he didn't hear. So if our consciousness is so full of Krishna that, then what others are saying will not make a difference. Okay, let me give an example in connection with the children. You see, nowadays the kids have this habit of all the time they are on their phone and their headphones and earphones are, on, and the music is going on. And, you even go and shout, get up or do this, see the doorbell is ringing, They are like, they don't know anything because they're so much into the music. And after some time, they'll take out the headphones and they'll say, yes, mama, you said something. And we are like all frustrated. What are you doing? You know, you're so much into the music. You didn't even hear I was calling you out. So this is what happens when we are so much connected to Krishna. You know, our headphones are so much full of Krishna that what the other people say, do, judge, doesn't make any difference. But now that we are not in that stage, but at least we understand the root cause of all problem is that we are not connected to Krishna. So if we can increase our connection to Krishna, read more of scriptures, then we will wait less for other people's acceptance and other people's comments and judgments on us. You see, so just that we need to have that connection with Krishna. There is this, you know, in my childhood, you know, this Anoop Jalota was very famous and he used to sing very beautiful Hindi bhajans. And I remember this one bhajan he used to sing, you know. He said, Banwari re jine ka sahara tera naam re mujhe duniya walo se kya kaam re. It was very beautiful. You know, Banwari re jine ka sahara tera naam re mujhe duniya walo se kya kaam. I used to love that, you know. My shelter is Krishna. What do I have to do with, you know, the world outside, the way they judge me or they don't judge me? You see, even if in the lives of elevated devotees like Sur Das or Tukaram or Narsimha Mehta or Jaidev Goswami, they were always judged wrongly by people in the material world. They always thought that they were useless people. You know, what are they doing? And they're, you know, they're like this and they're like that. They were always judged wrong. Even Jada Bharat was judged wrong. Even Mirabai was judged wrong by people. But Krishna judged them rightly. Krishna accepted them. So it's very difficult to satisfy this world and you know, to make sure that everybody in this world is not judgmental about you and thinks nice about you. It's not possible. It is something like you are trying to make the camels sit down. It's not going to happen. Even if this person thinks nice about you, there will be another person next day who will think bad about you. So the whole point is not trying to please the people around in this material world. We just want to please Krishna, Guru and Krishna. So this is one thing. And of course, sometimes in a devotee community, we may feel, oh, but they are Vaishnavas and they are being judgmental about me or they are being offended about me. So if that is it, just go and communicate. For everything, I feel the answer is open communication. Just talk, take time from that Prabhu or that Mataji. Please give me some time, I want to talk to you. Just go out, talk and speak to them. The whole point that I'm trying to make in principle is don't keep anything in your mind. That is a problem. Just express it, bring out a solution, close the account, finish it up. Just don't keep it in your mind. I don't know if this answer helps, but this is what is coming in my mind immediately.
So it's very difficult for a wife to tolerate and love him. So what should be done in that kind of situation?
Well, whatever I said in today's class doesn't include being abusive, because being abusive is not accepted. What to speak about in spiritual life, even in material life also. You can't abuse a person. So definitely, if the person is abusive, I don't expect that, you know, you be like Gandhiji, that, you know, you slapped my one cheek and here's my other cheek, when kindly you can slap me here too. Definitely not. But again, what is your definition of rude is also very important. Because you see, I'm not trying to belittle your question. Maybe he may be genuinely rude, but I have, in my experience, I've come around some Matajis who take my counseling through emails, and I've seen that even small little things, they call it rude. So I don't know, you know, if it is outrightly abusive, then definitely you can't be still loving, and you need to sort it out. You know, you need to get some help, some counselor, and sort it out. But if it's just about, you know, some people having that a typical nature of being a little not rude. You know, sometimes some people have this short temper and they are, you know, their language is like that, but otherwise they are very nice. So then there are ways you can work on it, because everybody has different natures, believe me. You know, in every husband and wife relation, there will be somebody, either sometimes the wife is very, you know, very short-tempered, sometimes the husband is very short-tempered, sometimes there will be always different kinds of nature. So you need to work out, because you see, when somebody is rude or angry, as I told you, it is you are simply seeing the tip of the iceberg. There are some underlying conditions which has brought this up on the top. So you need to work at the basement. You can't work on the top. You see, sometimes you get a boil on your cheek. You can put a sofromycin and ice cube. You will feel nice about it, but that's not the solution. The other boil will come up very soon. You need to get a blood report and make sure that your blood is clean, or take some Safi, then you won't get the boil again. So if your husband is rude or not nice to you, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There is something underlying. So you need to meditate on that. Where are you going wrong, or he going wrong? Or you see, sometimes, you know, I see in some families, their being rude is only byproduct of so many other problems that they are facing. Probably financial problem, probably health problem. You know, I've seen sometimes some husbands, they have blood pressure, or they have sugar, they have cholesterol, and they're not able to carry themselves, and sometimes it just bursts out, you know, because of the health issue which is happening in their body. Sometimes it's a financial issue, sometimes it's the peer pressure, sometimes it is something at the office. Maybe he's being abused by his boss or somebody out there, and he doesn't know on whom to take it out, and he just takes it out on you. So you see, if somebody is rude to you, it's so many things behind that. You need to just work on it, because it's your husband and you are dealing with him on a regular basis. And if at all the shastras are true and you have to carry forward with him 7 lifetimes, then you better start working on it. Then why is he behaving in this way or that way? I'm sorry, I'm just joking about it. I don't know about those 7 lives together, but I'm just telling you in case if that happens to be true. So start working on it, because nothing happens by chance, you know, just like that somebody doesn't start shouting or behaving badly. There's so many things. So maybe the atmosphere is at the house is not so good. Sometimes I've seen some Matajis, please don't take any offense, I'm just trying to explain you. You know, they chant 64 rounds, but they will not cook at home. They'll not clean at home. They won't, you know, and they expect the husband to come from office and do all the work. The poor guy is tired and then he has to come and help. So I've seen like that, you know, so maybe the house is not kept clean. Probably the teenage children, they're not listening to him. Or maybe he has a fight with a sibling. Oh my God, there can be 100 reasons why a person is rude. Or let's say he's conditioned like that, maybe because maybe he never got proper affection from his parents. Or probably he was brought up in a family where he always saw his mother and father behaving in such a way. So he thinks that it is his right to speak in such language. That is how he is trained to speak, because that's how he saw other people in his family do. So you see, there are hundreds of things. So you need to find out what is the reason for him behaving that way, and then you work on it. And you know, but one thing, you know, you can give him lots of love and affection and try to dig what is the actual reason, and bring about a solution there, and not on the superficial upper covering. You need to dive deep into that.
Thank you, Mataji. So now, one question from husbands, I believe, is that if there is a situation between wife and parents, they are not going along very well. So in that situation, how should a husband or a son
Universal problem, I guess. But you know what's a good thing about this? You see, individual suffering is a misery, but collective suffering is a bliss. You understand? So, you know, like I was telling you last Saturday also, that if the current goes, you know, in your house in India, the first thing we do is we go out and check if the neighbors have the current. If the neighbors also don't have the current, then you feel happy. But if they have light in their house and you don't have, you are finished. If you miss the bus, you feel very bad. But if there are at least 10 people with you who have missed the bus, then you are fine with it, you know. So individual misery is a suffering, but collective misery is a bliss. So whoever this this Prabhu is, Prabhu, don't feel so bad about it, because it's a problem with everybody, every grihastha. You're not the only person who is facing this problem about the wife and mother. What you can do is, you need to maintain some balance and, give affection on both the sides. Now, you have asked me a general question. I cannot make a blanket statement, because it can be so objective. Depends upon, sometimes parents are right and sometimes wife is right, you know. So you need to be the judge there and decide on whose side, you know, and when, because sometimes the parents become so unreasonable. You know, they have certain expectation which is not possible, keeping in the mind the current situation in which you are, your job and the place you are residing. And sometimes the wives become very unreasonable. So it is very objective. You need to decide on the individual case-to-case basis, because don't expect me to make a statement that in this kind of situation, Prabhu, kindly always support your parents. Or I can't say, Prabhu, kindly always support your wife. It's not possible. It depends upon case-to-case, you know, what situation it is, and you have to balance. But only thing I can do is that to maintain a beautiful relation between them, always make sure that you tell your parents, express to your parents how much your wife appreciates them, and you always express to your wife that how much your parents appreciate her and her good qualities. And even if they're not appreciating each other, you make up some story and do that, so that at least they will have some kind of positive vibes and liking towards each other. And that is how, you know, because as I said, there is no pakka solution for this. It depends upon case to case basis, because if sometimes even the parents are getting unreasonable, you can't support them, because sometimes in certain situations your wife may be right, or certain situations your parents may be right. This is what I can answer at this moment. Divorce is okay. Divorce, according to Shastra, is never okay. I mean, you know, Mandodari tolerated Ravan. You see, she never took a divorce, though she had the whole knowledge that Lord Ram was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But she still hanged around. I mean, she was still around with Ravan, and she did all the wife's duties of a wife. So definitely, I don't think in any place in the scriptures they talk about divorce, because there's nothing like divorce in the Vedic culture. Because when the husband and wife take a vow in front of the fire, they make fire as a witness, and they take so many vows, you know, of protecting each other, of being by each other's side, by helping each other in household chores, by you know, the husband vows of making the wife partner in all the ritualistic activities that he's going to do, to take her on a pilgrimage, to make her a part of all the important decisions that he makes in life, and to see all the other women as mothers. And even the wife makes so many promises of being a chaste wife, and being obedient to him and nice to him, and come in front of him if any danger attacks him. So these are all vows that a husband and wife make to each other in front of fire, Agni Devta. So there is no way that they can, you know, this is not an agreement that, you know, you break it. It has to go on for the rest of the life. But only thing is that sometimes in the present scenario, sometimes the situation is so bad, because when things get like, you know, physical abuse and hitting and beating, and if all that kind of situation happens, yeah, you can live separately, but you're still his wife, you know. So there's nothing called divorce, but yeah, you just stay in your parents' house or stay away if it is that bad, you know, where you can't tolerate to live with each other if there is mental and physical abuse. But according to Shastra, there's nothing like divorce. So once married, you married, that's it. No? You married. Yeah. So as I said, if there are lots of abuse, yeah, in the present scenario, people are getting crazy because they're taking crazy food. Right? You see now this whole situation that we are in today is because of someone out there taking some crazy food which is not meant for human consumption. And then they get all kinds of animalistic tendencies. So nowadays, because people take food which is not supposed to be consumed by humans, then they come out with all kinds of animalistic behavior. So then it becomes very difficult to stay together. So then, there are times where you will have to stay away from each other. But scriptures don't talk about, you know, anything called divorce. Yeah. I see a little boy in yellow shirt, and he's been raising his hands. But are you raising your hand, or is it your style? You raising your hand? Oh my God! You have a question? Oh, I'd love to take your question. Please ask.
Okay. So I'm going to unmute you. Now you can ask your question.
I don't know who allowed you into this seminar. This is for married couples. You listening on the behalf of your mom and dad? Yes, beta.
Hari
Bol.
Don't ask me tough question,
please. Be kind to me. I'm afraid. Yes. Yes, go ahead.
What if my mother says that's correct and my father says that's wrong?
Oh no. I knew that was coming. That's why I told you, don't be tough on me. Oh my God, what if your mother says right and father says wrong? What are you supposed to do? See, you put me in a fix. Okay. Then you just ask your grandfather or grandmother if you're not able to, you know, because how do I know who is right, beta? So then you ask somebody else, or you ask a mentor of your mother or father. You may be having some counselor, mentor, siksha guru, or grandparents. Or you can, you know, you attend some Sunday programs or some other Prabhujis, you ask them and do it, you know, if there is a controversy between your mom and dad, what can be done. Otherwise, I can give you my phone number. You can ask me. How sweet. Thank you very much, everybody. Vancha kalpata rubhayascha kripa sindhuvayavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha ananta koti vaishnavrinda ki jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna, Krishna, Krishna lage. Sab Krishna.